Question 22. It is a popular saying, this person received great strength from his guru. That is why he was saved from all dangers on the way. How do we understand this phrase, strength from the guru? Of all the innumerable powers of the Lord, Prasya Shaktir Vividaya Shuyate Subhava Gyana Bala Kriyacha. Prasya Shaktir Vividaya Shuyate. The Lord has so many powers. Powers mean Shaktis. Ladini Shakti and Sandini Shakti and so many Shaktis. Kripa Shakti, Mercy Shakti, so many. Creation, power of creation, power of mercy. These are powers, or Shaktis, potencies. So of all the innumerable powers of the Lord, one of His powers is called Acharya Shakti. Through this power, the Supreme Lord reveals the truth to the conditioned souls that are bound by Maya to the external energy, and He turns them towards the lotus feet of the Lord. The power that pulls the conditioned souls to the path of liberation or deliverance is called Acharya Shakti or Guru Shakti. This Acharya Shakti is customarily called strength from the Guru. This Guru Shakti always keeps the disciple on the path of sadhana. Consequently, there is no way that the disciple can fall away from the path of sadhana. Maya always seeks opportunities to swallow the sadhaka. When Maya brings the deep darkness of a new moon night over the sadhaka, or is Amavasya. In other words, when Maya puts you in Amavasya, puts you in the darkness, then the searchlight of Sri Guru Shakti or Sri Guru Kripa will immediately start shining brightly from behind him, casting all the darkness of ignorance far away and illuminating the disciple's heart with the lamp of knowledge. Therefore, you should know that Maya, the Lord's external power of ignorance, is always trying to keep you away from the Lord's lotus feet. And Maya is always trying to make you fall from the path of sadhana by covering over your knowledge. But when some firm power automatically arises within your mind to stop some vice from happening, vice means sin, then you should know that Sri Guru Shakti is being activated within you. This Guru Shakti unknowingly keeps all the sadhakas and disciples that are fully obedient to Sri Gurudev on the path of sadhana and gradually leads them towards elevation. That is why I say that you should always remain faithful and grateful to Sri Guru. So there's a reservoir a reservoir of power within an obedient and faithful disciple. We may not even know about it. We may not even be aware of it. Reserve tank. Remember, when we were very young, we had one Volkswagen, a little metal thing on the floor, and if you started to run out of gas, you would push that thing to one side, and it was called a reserve tank. And get more gas and keep going to the gas station, reserve tank, an old Volkswagen back in the 50s. So we have within us, within a faithful and grateful disciple, there is a reserve tank. And is that Guru Shakti? Of course, it's always acting. The Guru Shakti is the power, it's the potency of Guru, the purity of Guru to protect us. So Maya is always coming and trying to snatch us away. If we turn to Guru and say, Gurudev, please help me, Prabhupada, please help me, then from within us will come determination to fight against Maya. From within us will come some strength. We don't know where that quarter comes from, where that strength comes from, but it's coming from Guru. This is Guru Shakti. This is the strength. The question is, how do we understand the strength from Guru? The Guru Shakti is just deposited within the heart of the disciple. Shakti is invested within the heart of the disciple, by the Guru. And for one who's actually following the orders of the spiritual master sincerely, he'll never fall down. He'll never fall down. If he's actually following the orders, he will get that strength from Guru, that Shakti, to never fall down. So many temptations will be there, of all varieties. But he's actually, what are the orders of the spiritual master? Rise early every day. Well, are you rising early every day? That's the question. Chant your 16 rounds every day. Are you chanting 16 rounds every day? Study Srimad Bhagavatam every day. Are you studying Srimad Bhagavatam every day? I mean, study it, read it and study it. Worshipping Tulsi every day. Taking darshan, worshipping the deities every day. Either just taking darshan, chanting some shlokas before them, circumambulating temple. Different ways to worship deities. Studying Bhagavad Gita. Serving the Vaishnavas. All these orders come from the spiritual master. So if we're following those, then Maya will never defeat us. No matter how severe she may attack us, this Guru Shakti will protect us. This is our experience. If you desire over and over and over and over again to be in Maya, then Krishna will allow you to be in Maya. But free will is... free will, of course, is always there. But free, when you use the term free will, you're talking about illusory will. You're talking about will, the will of the body. You're talking about the will of the conditioned soul. The so-called free will is imprisoned will. That so-called free will is imprisoned by the modes of nature and your karma. Because the soul also has will. Free will. And the free will of the soul is, how many different ways can I serve Krishna? I will serve Krishna in this way, and I will serve Krishna in that way. The gopis and mandris also, and the coward boys have free will. Thinking, feeling, willing. This is a function of the mind. But there's a material mind and a spiritual mind. So the willing of the material mind is not really free. You call it free will. That term is common all over the world. Free will versus destiny. Right, we have this kind of this philosophical debate. Free will versus destiny. But even this free will is not free because it's conditioned by the modes of nature. You know, the free will of someone in the mode of ignorance is simply the way he expresses that free will is simply tamagun, by ignorance, intoxication. But the free will of someone in passion is running around in a greedy way trying to make money and things like that. So that's his free will. I want to make money. That's my free will. And the other one says, I want to be intoxicated and lie in the street like a bum. So that's the expression of his free will. So the will becomes free when the soul becomes liberated from the body. Then you can actually express free will, your choice to serve Krishna in unlimited ways. But free will, so for if you're speaking about free will in relation to initiated devotee, what we're speaking here is the Maya is always attacking the devotee and seeking opportunities to swallow him. That's the destiny aspect of the devotee. Maya is acting on him according to his destiny. He has so many karmas, prarabdha karmas, for lusty activities or greedy activities or cheating activities. So Maya will come and present those opportunities. Like for one person, they're greedy, they can't control their tongue. So they have these desires for eating, so many desires. So Maya will present opportunities for that due to their karma, their destiny. Another person, some other Maya they have due to their... So Maya will present those things to purify them, to test them. So then, at that time, when you're being tested by Maya and your karma, then you express the will of your soul by calling out to Gurudev. And you pray to Krishna, Krishna, please save me. Please protect me. It's like Haridas Thakur, when the prostitute came to him in dead of night, in a lonely place, he kept chanting Hare Krishna. He took shelter of Krishna's name and then was protected. With Vishwamitra Muni, he was meditating on the banks of Jamuna or somewhere, and some heavenly girl came, Menaka, and he fell down because he didn't have that strength, didn't have that protection from Krishna, because he depended on his own power. I'm a big yogi, I'm controlling my senses. He didn't call out for anybody's help. He felt, I don't need anybody's help. It's just some girl with ankle bells from the heavenly planets. I'm controlling my senses. I've been celibate for 60,000 years. I've been celibate for 60,000 years. I must have been Brahman Tejas. I must be powerful Brahmachari. And then he was finished. But Haridas Thakura, he wasn't 60,000 years old. He was about, I don't know, 25 or something. He was a young man. He wasn't chanting Hare Krishna for 60,000 years. chanting Hare Krishna for a few years, the Maya personified came, much more than some small-time heavenly damsel. Much more, 1,000 times more beautiful and attractive and alluring and enchanting. They didn't fall down. So the free will of a devotee is that he's expressing his free will to serve the Lord. So such a devotee will take shelter of the Guru and of Krishna's name and get that Guru Shakti within him to overcome all the Maya and never fall down. The Maya that comes to him because of his destiny, free will and destiny. But if the devotee expresses his free will and says, I want to fall down, my destiny is presenting these opportunities for me. My destiny and karma is presenting this Maya to me. Maya is presenting my karmic desires to me. And I accept it. I want it. Then Krishna will try to hold him back and then make arrangements to protect him once, twice, three times maybe. But if the disciple keeps insisting, I want to fall down, I want to fall down, I want to fall down, then he will. So that's what you're saying. What about free will? But one who's actually becoming, the soul who's become liberated, will actually get in touch with the spiritual will. And he'll express his will by taking shelter of Krishna when the destiny or Maya attacks him. We have free will. We have the choice. We can choose the external energy of the Lord or the internal energy of the Lord. So the whole idea of spiritual life is to make a choice of the internal energy, because we have experience. Well, the external energy is Bahir Anga Shakti. And it hasn't been a pleasant one. So now we say, well, I've tried that, now let me try this. And so we're trying it. The very practice of bhakti means you're entering into the internal energy. Bhakti is the internal energy. The more we practice purified bhakti, the more we're in the internal energy. As Krishna says in Gita, Mahatmanas Timam Parte Daivim Prakritim Ashrita. Right? He says that the devotees take shelter of Daivi Prakriti, the spiritual energy, the internal energy of the Lord. So we're experiencing something of the bliss of Goloka, something of the bliss of Vrindavan, even though we're in the middle, intermediate stage. So we're thinking, now we can kind of make a decision. All right, I know what the Bahiranga Shakti is. I've been in it from time immemorial. And now I'm starting to taste and experience a little bit of the taste of the soul, the Param Jasva Nivartate. Right, Vishayam Nivartante, Rasu Varjam Rasopyasya. I'm tasting a drop of that bhakti ras, Rasu Varjam Rasopyasya. And that rasu, that taste of that bhakti ras is Paramjasva Nivartate. It is the higher taste. So now we're tasting the Antaranga Shakti to some extent. So now we can make the choice. Well, what do you want? Here's your free will. Do you want the Maya of your destiny? You want to chew your destiny? And relish and try to taste your destiny and chew that and stay in the external energy? Or you want to relish bhakti ras and go to the internal energy? That's our choice. So obviously an intelligent person will try the internal energy for a change. Question 23. There is a class of people who are always very busy trying to become the guru of the people for the sake of gaining profit, adoration, and distinction. Lobh, Pooj and Pratishta. Can we call these people who are so eager to gain profit, adoration, distinction from the ordinary people, and who are always depending on other people, can we actually call such people gurus? A person who does not try to become a guru and who has no self-esteem as a guru, he is a guru. For a guru is a guru by himself. Why should he become a guru or want to become one? He was lagu, light, wants to become guru, heavy. The word lagu means light and guru means heavy. Therefore, he who is always eager to become guru is still lagu, and he has not attained the status of guru yet. The status of guru means a full status of humanity. A person who automatically shows all the great virtues of a human being to the full extent, he is the ideal guru for the whole world. I told you this before. All the people of the world will automatically bow their heads to he who is a genuine Jagat Guru, universal teacher. But know that this goes only for the guru. For the disciple, I must say with great firmness that when he takes initiation from such a person who craves for profit, adoration and distinction, then he must certainly establish a guru awareness of him and show proper respect and devotion for him, so that the disciple's guru bhakti is not even slightly diminished, not even by mistake. As a matter of fact, he should very carefully try to gradually increase his guru nishtha, loyalty. At the time of initiation, the disciple should fully surrender unto the guru, considering him to be God himself. The disciple has no more right to independence, for he did not surrender himself to a human being. He surrendered himself unto the Lord himself. As long as one is not accepted a guru, he can distinguish between gurus. But as soon as he did accept a guru, he should not have any deliberation about Gurudev anymore. You may remember that I told you previously that if a grateful and obedient disciple considers his Gurudev to be exactly like the Lord, then the guru may be anyone, and the Lord will act through him. Therefore, even towards this kind of guru, the disciple should have an unshakable faith. Interesting point. He's saying here in this whole discussion, even if your guru became a guru because he wanted profit, adoration, distinction, which ostensibly are not good things, still a disciple should have all kinds of guru bhakti for him and all kinds of guru nishtha for him. And because of the disciple's sincere guru bhakti and guru nishtha, that Krishna will somehow or other act through that guru for him. He will not be a human being because the disciple is so much trying to see that guru as God. And we see examples of that in our own movement. We see that there were some gurus that were very much interested in these things, and eventually they left due to their interest in these things. But their disciples, many of them, they were very sincere and obedient to them, and saw them, had great guru bhakti and great guru nishtha. They're still doing quite all right, and they've received shelter in a proper guru by the arrangement of, we call reinitiation or something. So this is an example of that. That because they were, that Krishna, even though that guru was off, or you could say not properly acting, Krishna acted through that guru and blessed those disciples and gave them spiritual advancement, and they maintained their purity and they made some advancement. And then they were able to again to get proper shelter of guru. Proper guru. So this, we have examples of this very point. Question 24. Many people ask, what is the use of taking a guru when you can just call upon or worship the Lord yourself? Can Krishna be worshipped without a guru? Look, Baba, there is no other way to progress in spiritual life than by surrendering to Sri Guru's lotus feet. Attainment of knowledge is fully dependent on the guru. Yeah, this is like repetitive. Whatever knowledge you have gathered since your childhood, did you learn it all by yourself? You learned it from a teacher? You see that you have taken shelter of teachers to gain some knowledge about material issues. You have listened attentively to their teachings and have acted according to their instructions. In this way, you have gained some knowledge. To understand the truth of God, one must undergo spiritual teachings. In truth, Guru and God are the same thing. If he does not personally bestow his mercy and turn our averse hearts towards his lotus feet, then how can conditioned souls like us even understand a drop of the inconceivable truth about Krishna? The super soul appears externally as Gurudev simply to bring the conditioned souls that are favorable towards him with good instructions, advice, and teachings. A sadhaka is very smart and clever if he leaves the Lord aside and first holds on to the guru. And if he's a fool, he leaves aside the guru to hold on to the Lord himself. Don't you know that we must understand and realize the nature of God through discussions of difficult and subtle principles? And this is only accessible through the instructions of a bona fide guru. That is why I say that you should remember to worship the guru in favor of the Lord. But you can never worship Govinda without worshiping the guru. Direct communion with God without the help of guru is inconceivable. The guru saves the disciple from each of his sins, and it is not the Lord who is to be sought without him. This is question 25. What is the very first benefit of following the orders of Sri Gurudev so that the disciple advances on the path of sadhana? Do you know why it is so important to follow Gurudev's instructions in order to make advancement on the path of sadhana? We don't follow Gurudev's instructions, we follow the dictates of our mind. It's so important to follow the Gurudev's instructions to make advancement, because the instructions of the spiritual master destroy all the worries about external matters that trouble the disciple's mundane consciousness. And then he can be led towards the Lord's lotus feet. We were mentioning the other day to one devotee that the purpose of the spiritual master is to remove the anxiety from the disciple, so the disciple's mind can become peaceful. When the mind is peaceful, then they can progress in the path of spiritual life. In other words, this is what he's saying here: destroy all the worries about external matters that trouble the disciple's material consciousness. So we have material consciousness, and we want to make it spiritual. We want to purify our consciousness. But if we're troubled by so many anxieties and so many problems, so Gurudev, he comes to create peace within us, to alleviate our doubts and to make us happy and peaceful, and remove all our anxiety. His instructions, we want to follow his instructions. Why? Because if we follow Gurudev's instructions, what will happen? All our anxieties will be removed. All our worries will be removed. Great hope will arise within us. Great happiness will arise within us. That's so that the question is, why? What is the first benefit of following the orders of the Gurudev? We'll get free from anxiety. We'll get free from all worries from our consciousness. Our consciousness will become peaceful. That's the first benefit. In other words, why should I follow? Because you want this? Everybody you meet. Oftentimes when you meet people in different countries, what they say, they ask you, they say, oh, you're taking up this spiritual life? Are you peaceful? It makes you peaceful? Gives you peace? Why is that? Because this is Kali Yuga. Mandusa manda matiyo. The characteristic of this age is that everybody in this age, every German, Indian, French, American, Finn or whatever, Holland, or Dutch, or whatever you are, everyone is wholesale disturbed. They're in anxiety. So much anxiety and disturbance, mental anxiety, alienation and frustration and unfulfilled desires and hankering, lamenting. So much anxiety is there. And you see it all over the people's faces. For the most part, I mean, there are exceptions naturally. But for the most part. So then, coming to spiritual life with all these anomalies and problems, then there's that means there's something special about the orders of the spiritual master. And you'll get benefit. What is the very first benefit? What benefits do I get? You want to work for a company, you say, all right, I'll work for you. So what are the benefits? Oh, you'll get medical insurance, you'll get free glasses, you'll get your teeth cleaned, and you'll get every year that you work here, you'll get the extra $1,000 benefit, you'll get 2 weeks vacation. Oh, that's very good. And we'll give free housing for your family, and you'll get a company car. Oh, so many benefits. And after 30 years, you get retirement. So what is the benefit? I follow these orders. What good is it? Why should I follow these orders? Chant 16 rounds, rise early, this and that. Well, you get free from anxiety. You become peaceful. Oh, really? Oh, sounds pretty good. I tried 1,001 different kinds of pills and 1,001 different kinds of techniques and this and that, and none of them really worked. Let me try it out. It is not always possible to continue in this world without noticing the faults and virtues, and the good and bad, of others. Nor is it possible to follow the orders of everyone in this world. Consequently, at some places, it is not possible to see the faults in people. But there is one place where the disciple should not find fault. If he finds fault there, or has any kind of inner deliberation, then he should know that he has no benefit from taking a guru. If the disciple thinks, Gurudev, you have not understood this properly. Or, why did he say such a thing? Why did he, Gurudev? Then the guru has become to you an ordinary human being. Hence, I told you before that following the order of understanding the guru principle is a very difficult task. You cannot conceive of him as Bhagavan. And if you conceive of him as a human being, you commit an offense. Fortunate is that disciple who has sold his head to the lotus feet of the guru, who does not deliberate when following the orders of the guru, who considers himself very fortunate to be allowed to do so, and who does not waver even an inch in this matter. Of course, that's the rare disciple, but the very fortunate disciple who simply he receives an order from the spiritual master and he does it enthusiastically and in a very wonderful way, with full heart and full enthusiasm. No deliberation. Well, why did he ask me to do this? And well, who is he anyway? And he, what's the purpose of it? And he's just some person, and he doesn't understand. He doesn't really understand me. Otherwise, he wouldn't have asked me to do this. He doesn't understand me. So what you're saying is that he's not God, because God doesn't understand you. He's right in your heart. He doesn't understand. Well, no, I know Guru is God, but you know, in this case, he really doesn't understand me. Otherwise, he wouldn't have given me this order. And I have a real difficult time doing it, and I'm not going to do it. I won't do it. That's it. I won't do it. So that's what we call the unfortunate disciple. Question 26. You said that Guru Tattva and Krishna Tattva is basically the same thing. But of the two, which is easier and which one is harder to practice for the engaged sadhaka? Service of Guru or service of Krishna? Which is harder? Which is easier? Although these two principles, Krishna Tattva and Guru Tattva, are basically one, still it's harder to understand the nature of Krishna or to engage in his service, because Krishna cannot be understood through our present material bodies and minds. Krishna cannot be understood with the blunt material senses, but he's understood by seva, seva mukehi jivato. Beginning with the jiva, with the tongue, when you begin to serve the Lord, mukhe, with your face, by speaking about Him, taking prasadam, chanting His name, Atat Sri Krishna Namadi. Krishna can be understood beginning with the name, in the tongue, so that you can realize God with your tongue, not with your eyes, by chanting His name and tasting His prasadam. Vibration and tasting are the functions of the tongue. So we vibrate the holy name of the Lord, and we taste His holy prasadam, and that way we have spurti, Swayam eva spurat yada. Krishna Bhagavan, Swayam Bhagavan, Sri Krishna. We have spurti. We see Him through the tongue. You see God with your tongue. Your first darshan of God will come through your tongue when you chant Shuddha Nam. Right? You'll see Nam, Rup, Guna, Lila, everything. So the tongue, this tongue is our eye. You want to see God? Here it is. Your tongue. You'll see God with this little red thing in the middle, in this mouth here. That's how you'll see God. That is your eye to see God. With one eye, you'll see God. With one tongue. From what we understand at present about Guru Tattva and Guru Seva, it is not unreasonable to say that at present, the Guru principle is harder to understand than the Krishna principle. That's why we mentioned in the onset of this discussion that of all the tattvas, Krishna Tattva, Prema Tattva, Srishti Tattva, Guru Tattva is most difficult. Guru Tattva, Jiva Tattva, and Shiva Tattva. These are three most. But of the three, Guru Tattva is most difficult. But if you understand it, then perfection is easily within your reach. The Krishna principle is easy, for it is intangible. If you rebuke Krishna, He will not respond. When you give nice foodstuffs to the deity, He will not eat anything. And we will eat all the prasad. The deity is bathed with one spoon of water and the utterance of Krishnaya Namaha, Idam Snaninam Klim Krishnaya Namaha. And in the winter, the deity is protected from the cold by wrapping Him in a small rag. Not exactly a rag, but a small chatter or something. But all this cannot be done when you come to the Guru. To give Him a bath, to give the Guru a bath, you have to bring 2 to 4 jugs of water from the Ganga. And when you give Him nice foodstuffs to eat, He may eat everything. And there may be no prasad left. And even if there is any left, it will not fill the belly. He eats everything, leaves like just a piece of rice and some dal or something. He said, Jai, prasad, Guru prasad, mercy. And you eat that and say, well, what do we do for lunch? Got the mercy, now what about lunch? what about filling the belly? That is why I said that for the moment, the service of Guru is more difficult than the service of Krishna for you. As Krishna is a transcendental autocrat, And he's free to change his mind at any moment. And Gurudev has to be seen in the same way as Krishna. You can't stereotype a spiritual master. The disciple says, I want to do this. The spiritual master says, no. And the disciple insists, yes, yes, yes. And Gurudev says, okay, do it. Then the disciple does it. And it turns out all right by the Lord's arrangements. And the Gurudev says, very well, it was a good thing you did. So there seems to be some contradiction there. But the contradiction is only apparent because of our inability to perceive transcendence. Because we see the same principle throughout the pastimes of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. There's so much contradiction. And the Upanishads, it says he has no hands and no legs, but he walks. And he has no mouth, but he eats. You know, so many things, so many contradictions are there when describing the Absolute Truth. You know, he's supposed to preach morality when he dances with other men's wives. And so many contradictions throughout the Shastra. We wrote something to you once in paper about that. And cited different quotes. You could also look up in Prabhupada's books about that point. So if Krishna is full of contradictions, but there's no contradictions, only what we call apparent contradictions due to our lack of synthesis, our lack of knowledge to perceive and synthesize the transcendental energy of the Lord and the transcendental workings of the Lord. It's from our viewpoint. What is contradiction from our viewpoint is absolute harmony and synthesis, and no contradiction at all from the Lord's viewpoint, from the transcendental viewpoint. So the spiritual master, he perceives things at a particular time. He says, this is not good. And then the disciple's insisting. So then he prays to the Lord deeply. So Krishna, what should be done? And Krishna says, yes, let him do. So then he says, all right, you do. And then because it was sanctioned from Krishna, then the result was correct. So, in either way, the sanction came from Krishna. Because at first the disciple approached Guru and said, I want to do this, and Krishna said, no. Then he asked two or three times, and Krishna said, yes. You see? And then the result was good. Because Krishna sanctioned it. Krishna allowed it. Through Guru. So we don't see any contradiction. It's the flow of Krishna's energy through Guru. Because nothing comes out without the saying, you know, a blade of grass doesn't move without the will of the Lord. So in this case of guru-disciple, the guru is free to change his opinion. Or as I cited the example before of two brahmacharis in the same position, seeming same position, same age, same inclination, everything. They met with Prabhupada, and Prabhupada told one, you stay brahmachari, and the other one, he told you, get married. And they couldn't understand, because in their hearts, both of them wanted to be brahmachari. They didn't have any idea, but somehow Prabhupada could see. He understood, so they acted accordingly. So same circumstance, seemingly same situation, but Gurudev is seeing and giving two different instructions. So this is the right of the spiritual master. Being Krishna's potency, he has the right to say yes and no, and yes, no, yes, yes, no, no. We cannot impose upon transcendence our limitations or our standard of what we call contradiction. From our viewpoint, it appears contradiction. But what is our viewpoint? Our viewpoint itself is contradictory. Our viewpoint itself is limited, and our viewpoint itself is imperfect because we're conditioned. And so if we impose this condition of limitation on the guru and say he's also limited, and he's also exhibiting contradiction here, then it's aparad, it's offense. Because the guru is in an absolute position. And Krishna himself, he's the absolute truth, and he's full of contradictions. To the materialist, God, or Krishna, accepting Krishna as God, he's an abode of contradictions. But to the acharyas, these contradictions are embellishments. The apparent contradictions of the Lord's behavior, actions, or teachings in different incarnations are simply embellishments and ornaments and decorations that further and enhance and elevate and expand the wonderful glories of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He's so unlimited. He can harmonize and do all these wonderful things. When the baby starts off, the baby's taking mother's milk. But after 5 years, no, mother's milk is not there. Then something else is there. some regular food is there. So in the beginning, the guru is saying, okay, you do this service and do this bhajan. Then 5 years later, he's saying, now do this. So it's not a change so much as it is an evolution. As the soul is evolving and progressing, then the food is being, different food is being administered. Different instructions are being given. And you can say that it's not a change in relationship, it's just the development of the soul. It's the development of the consciousness. So the guru is actually applying, we mentioned this in the relation of the holy name, that generally the spiritual master will say to chant, chant out loud, but later on he may say, okay, chant in your mind. That can be there. If he sees the nature of the disciple, he may say, all right, you do manasik japa in your mind and you meditate on these pastimes or whatever. So that's a change. But simply for the development of the disciple, he gives different instructions at different time. It's not just you just do the same thing, it's continually refining and improving and for the advancement and development of that soul. Krishna changes every second. The Krishna you know now will be a different Krishna a second from this. Krishna is always changing and always expanding. So if you say you know Krishna now, well, in a second from now he'll be different. So we're always increasing our understanding and our realization of Krishna. Him, Krishna himself, he looks in the water and he sees his reflection. He says, who is this beautiful person? I never seen such a beautiful person. He's looking at himself. And then, and because every second he looks at the reflection, a new beauty is there. Because when he left his house in the morning in Nandagram, he looked at his face and he saw it a certain way. And later on in the noontime, when he looked in Yamuna and saw his face was different because his beauty had changed and increased. And didn't recognize, who is this? You were going to say something? How Prabhupada was bringing out the love of the disciples by saying, well, I can stay, I can go. This is his pastime to increase the love. And then the devotees will say, Prabhupada, we all met together and we want you to stay. So then Prabhupada nonchalantly yawned, all right, I'll stay. And all the way, oh, Jai Prabhupada, what are you doing to us? You bring us to the point of total exasperation, desperation, and then you just yawn like, okay, I'll stay. And Prabhupada, what are you doing to us? And so he explains in that book how this is a pastime between the guru and disciples to bring out more affection and increase their attachment and love for Krishna. So it's a very sweet and blissful and affectionate pastime between guru and disciple. And if the guru says, I'm increasing, it doesn't mean that you hold that against the guru and say, oh, you're increasing, mean you're not there yet. If he said, the guru says, I'm increasing my relationship or increasing my understanding of Krishna, then you have some doubt. Oh, it's like perfection is always perfection itself. By definition, the word perfection means there's no higher attainment. That's the meaning of perfection. The highest possible position is perfection. That's a material definition of perfection, the highest possible position in something. Perfection of tennis or something. You get the highest post and that's it. That's the perfection of that thing or something, that pursuit. But in transcendence, perfection has an unlimited definition. Because perfection is always increasing and increasing. This is transcendental perfection. So for the Gurudev to say, I'm always increasing in my relationship with Krishna or increasing my understanding, that's correct. That Gurudev is rightly situated in spiritual energy. If the Gurudev says, I know it all, I know everything, and it's all just, you know, as it is, then that Gurudev is not actually situated in spiritual energy. Because that static position of knowing everything or not increasing and not improving, that's material energy. Because it's in a static position, but transcendence is dynamic. It's always expanding, always increasing. Krishna explains in Adi Lila in chapter 4, that Radharani's love is increasing more and more and more at every moment. They call this term transcendental competition. That Krishna and the gopis are always competing. Radharani and the gopis are always competing for each other. Radharani displays a certain feature of beauty and Krishna becomes attracted. Oh, she's so beautiful. Then when Krishna is attracted to Radharani, his attraction increases and Radharani looks at Krishna. Oh, he looks more attractive this moment than he did the last moment. Now when she sees Krishna's attraction, she responds to that within herself. That increase in Krishna's attraction creates a change within Srimati Radharani She feels so much blissful and happy by seeing Krishna's improvement and beauty that she increases her beauty. Now Krishna says, oh, in the next moment Krishna says, Radharani's beauty is again increased. So I'm so amazed, and it's increased my happiness. And he becomes, and then he exhibits this increase of happiness and appreciation of Radharani. And she sees that increase in happiness and appreciation of, in Krishna's face. And she increases her attraction, and this goes on and on and on, unlimitedly. This is described in Chaitanya Charitamrita. So this is the nature of perfection. It never stops. And anandam buddhi vardhanam. This is Sankirtan. Chaito Darvana Marjanam Bhava Mahadavagni Nirvapanam Shreya Kaivara Vichandaka Vicharanam Vidya Varu Jivanam Anandam Buddhi Bhardhanam. This Ananda, this spiritual Ananda, this exchange of love between the soul and the super soul, between the devotee and Krishna, devotee, disciple and guru, it is Ambuddhi Vardhanam. Vardhanam means Govardhan, increasing. Vardhanam means always increase and double and triple. We say in Sagratan, double it and triple it and quadruple it and always do more and more books. It's transcendental competition. And they're doing that. So in the same way, in the exchange of love between disciple and guru, you should double your love, double your bhakti, and triple your bhakti, and quadruple your bhakti. Doubling your love for guru means doubling your love for Krishna. So this is the this ocean of anandam buddhi. This ocean of bliss is always increasing more and more and more.